It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Good morning, Citizen Lobbyist.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine, even with a little dampness that's been out there. So I think it's going to be a good day. We have a week to look back on. Where would you like to start?
Well, it looks like you streamed the Palmer City Council meeting. I listened to about the 5 minutes of it.
Okay, I can kick it off. I can
kick it off there, and then there is. I did want to talk a little bit today. There is the first of the deliberations on the borough budget tonight, and there's been some interesting amendments already proposed.
Okay, well,
we can go over those too.
Yeah. Oh, great. Let's do Tuesday, and then we'll slip. Looking forward to tonight, Thursday. By the way, for listeners and for yourself, Joe Moore will be there. He will be there, and he will stream and record the meeting, and so that'd be all good too. That'd be a good thing. All right, so Tuesday, the city of Palmer had its regular meeting. It was a little bit of a shorter group up there because the mayor was attending, Mayor Edna DeVries was attending one of the graduations. And so that left the vice mayor, Pete LaFrance, in charge. He did a good job. And also it happened that the city manager, Nate Wallace, is taking a well-earned vacation. He hasn't done one in a long, long time. And so the appointed person to sit up there as the temporary manager was Lance Ketterling, Palmer's chief of police. So both Mr. Ketterling, Chief Ketterling, and Mr. LaFrance did a good job of running the meeting in the absence of the regular. There were a number of things that appeared on the agenda that were in the form of some business that were taken care of. But I think from my perspective, one of the most interesting and actually the topic that took a bit of discussion involved a proposal by an ad hoc group to do a creative crosswalk design as a pilot over in the area where the Friday Fling happens, the crossing between the Palmer Museum and the Pavilion. And this, just to bring people up to date, had already been brought by the group to the committee that's in charge of parks and trails and so on. And it was unanimously supported to be brought forth to the city council. This was not an item, and here's where you begin to look and say, okay, to what degree should the city council be involved in approving things, et cetera? What's going to be in the purview of the city manager? What's going to be something that's dealt with by one of the committees that is focused on topics? And there was not a specific item for approval for the city council to vote on. But after the presentation of persons to be heard, Jill Valerius, Dr. Jill Valerius, is a member of that committee, spoke, and she explained what had happened to date. And then at a point toward the end of the meeting, Councilwoman Julie Burbrick moved to essentially support the proposal. And then the discussion began, and you began to realize that, okay, this is the process that a person uses so that you can encourage people to come forth with creative ideas is important. Just a reminder to listeners that this is not a proposal to use money that the city would expend, but actually to work with the Public Works Department as members of that department do their normal layout of a crosswalk, and then to provide both materials and paint and people to put a design in there that would be appropriate within the guidelines that various DOT standards and city standards require. This was thought to be something that could be done. It would involve the closing of the street area, which already happens, and it would be when Friday Fling happens. And it had been worked out in a long discussion with the city manager and the director of the Department of Public Works, and there were ideas about what if this, that, and the rest of it. But I think the important point was that this is meant to be a pilot from which perhaps later on down the road the city of Palmer would want to develop a policy, et cetera, to both encourage others to be creative in the use of design, et cetera, around town, maybe with crosswalks, maybe with some other things, and a process for handling it that would be placed either with the city manager or a board of some sort. But would probably, at least in my opinion, an observation, would not be a situation where the city council would be tasked with agreeing to or coming up with a design, agreeing to design, getting its collective hands into the paint itself. Whew. So that's a long discussion. Comments, et cetera?
Yeah, I'm really, really proud of the team that put this together. This was, as Dr. Valeria said, sort of the kickoff idea from the Gil Penalosa presentation that was given the end of January at AARP. A little disclaimer, I still wear the hat of state president for that. Arranged to have Gil Penalosa, livability expert, come up in January and give a big talk at the depot that was widely attended and still talked about, I'm happy to say. And this was one of the ideas from that, was to bring attention to pedestrian safety and also getting people out to walk. So beyond that, the Palmer Community Foundation hosted a kind of a potluck with people that were still interested in trying to pick up projects that might make sort of what they saw was low-hanging fruit. Not a lot of money, not a lot of ask for the city for infrastructure changes, but could make a difference in people's and visitors' lives in the community. And this team really kind of went with the ball, and it wasn't easy. They had to go to, they met themselves, ad hoc group. They had to go and present their idea to the Parks, City Commission on Parks.
Recreation and Trails, right?
Recreation part, right, and had to talk to them about that and get their blessing, and they unanimously signed up on this idea. They had to work very closely with Public Works. And that's not always easy because Public Works has a lot of work to do that they line up in the city to get done in a very short period of time. And this kind of takes everybody out of their element to do something a little different, but they had cooperation there. And number one, and the other thing is they dug into their own pockets to get it done. They felt so strongly about doing this pop-up project. And they picked an area that they didn't have to go to the state to get DOT blessing on, so they simplified it and made it just the avenue to work with the city. So really, learning experience for everybody, but not enough can be said about this small group, but very passionate group of people in the city that really wanted to see something come out of that conversation and show that these little demonstrative projects can really can be fun, and also be very effective in communities. So we'll keep following on that, Mike. It was received well from the city, I think.
Yeah, they ultimately agreed. It was a 5-1 vote to essentially for this one project as a pilot,
yeah,
to direct the city manager to work with the group and make it happen. And
who was the one vote against it?
Linda Combs. And it was an interesting vote. She had some. Well, there were a couple of people on the council who had concerns about it. But I think, and in fact, she spoke actually in favor of what ultimately passed initially when the first motion was made. But I think if it had been more clearly presented as a pilot from which there would be be a report that could be used to determine into the future how to handle these things. That would be better, because the alternative approach, and both the chief of police and the lawyer kicked in with some, you know, due diligence comments about things to be concerned about. I think the point made that is that, okay, the fears about setting a precedent are legitimate, but if you make it very clear that what this is going to be is a way to gain enough information to be able to say, okay, so here's what happened. How do we want to go move forward? Not using this as a precedent setter so that then any group that comes forward can just say, we want to do it, we're just going to do this, but rather set some guidelines that make everybody able to be encouraged to come forward, and also to have the city do its due diligence in ensuring that things are done well. So I think ultimately they got there. It just, they took a kind of a torturous path thinking about, well, maybe they should have public hearing about it, et cetera, et cetera. And I think they finally agreed that, okay, this was an opportunity to test something, and it was not a full-blown, this is the way we're going to do it in the future.
Right, right, yeah. It'll be interesting. I'll finish listening to that discussion, because that sounds like a worthy thing to do. But, yeah, we have to be very careful sometimes about predict or making barriers, so to speak, on things that really should be pretty simple. If you've already covered with the attorney the liability issues, you're not asking for any city funds. It's a demonstrative project. It seems pretty arduous to expect somebody to jump through some more hoops to kind of get some things done. Should really just, like you say, demonstrate what could be in a visual form.
Sure.
So I think that the council made a really good decision in that case. And, you know, it opens the door for, you know, to explore other things that are done in communities that, you know, make this community better.
I think the message that came out of Gil Penalosa's presentation and the takeaway and what really energized this particular effort was the idea that if you are a citizen, you're part of the community, to take away the focus that says you have to go to the city and request the city to do something, when you could, as an individual or a group, be a partner with the city. Again, finding that sweet spot between just not willy-nilly doing anything, but also and doing something safely, and also being respectful of the public property, because I think that's one of the things that city council members feel is the importance of their ability to ensure that the public property will continue to serve the public and not be in some way damaged by someone who says, well, I just want to put up this whatever anywhere. It's worthwhile. And I'm going to also say, if you go to radiofreepalmer.org, you'll find that we archive our stuff there. And, of course, the audio is up. We streamed it, recorded it. It's up there, and you can be listened to. But there's also a video that should be available through links on that website, so you can actually see what's happening. Most of the discussion, for those who would be going there, occurred at the end of the meeting. The last 20 minutes, 30 minutes or so. So that's that. There was also a presentation. There are a couple of other things. One that was kind of interesting was a presentation by the vice president of a group from a subdivision down just beyond the Palmer Junior Middle School. As many people know, there's new housing, a pretty complex that's being built behind the MTA Events Center. And there are two access roads, one that comes along from the area along by the Palmer Junior Middle School, and the other one that comes off and was designed to be a an emergency route. But the people in that subdivision alongside the road have felt that it's been used in a way that has created noise, et cetera. And what they asked was that the city's code compliance group take a look at that and say, live up to the agreement that had been made when the promises to do this and that when the complex was being built were made. Linda Combs, Councilwoman Linda Combs, at her comment time, was very clear that she was very much interested in ensuring that that be looked at. I think it was a respectful reminder by the vice president of that group who came forward and said, hey, you know, we just want to bring this to your attention and request that you do what you said you were going to do.
Well, all development has impacts on community, Mike, and when a developer agrees to certain things that they need to do, which is, you know, the city's job to try to make those impacts as least as they can for the neighbors, then enforcement becomes an important part of a successful development. So it's good that they came and spoke out, and hopefully they'll come to a meeting of the minds, and there'll be a better outcome for the people that live there.
There was also a review of what happened at an event honoring John Lee. A new helicopter area was named after him, and there were some slides about that event. It was a beautiful day, and the chair of the Airport Advisory Board and others spoke to the long time contributions made by John Lee to the community and to the aeronautical society that exists in this area. So that was nice to see too as well. So maybe we should move now in the remaining time we have to talk a bit about what's coming up in the series of meetings, of the process that's going on. As we're talking this morning, we're understanding that the governor has called the legislature into a continuing session beyond the 121 days for 30 days, and it's going to start at 10 a.m. today. On Thursday, and it will continue for 30 days, going to be done in Juneau, so legislators will return to their familiar haunts, their offices and staff, et cetera, and continue to do their work as they focus, as the governor suggested, on items that they have not completed to date. So this has implications for the borough meeting, and because they're still working on their budget, et cetera. So what's on the docket for this Thursday evening meeting?
Yes, well, first of all, I couldn't quite stay up late enough to make the final decision whether they were going to adjourn last night, but it was certainly an interesting political gamesmanship yesterday between the governor and the different bodies of the legislature. So there was some talk yesterday even that the special session would happen here in Mat-Su, and there was some interesting speculation on that. But the borough assembly did modify their normal calendar for having deliberations over their own budget kind of around this final day of the legislature, thinking that by they would know something a little more on the 16th to start their deliberations based on the state being done on the 15th. And that didn't happen, although they are to start their special session right away this morning. Anything can happen in the next 10 hours before the assembly meeting. But right, so far, they're kind of going into it not knowing much more than they did last week. There has been some interesting budget amendments filed.
Right. I appreciate you sent me a copy of them. Let's walk through. Yes.
And they'll be, if it's anything like last budgets that I've sit in on, Mike, and I'm not even sure how many I've sat through now, but there'll be some at the table, too, but these so far are some that we know about. There is some technical ones, which is always sort of the case where departments kind of look at things and want to kind of get ahead of any cuts that might come their way on things by kind of sharpening their pencils. And the first one, there was increases having to do with the emergency services area of the budget. One of Caswell Lake, some equipment that they're seeing that they're going to need there, something to do, a few from the Massachusetts Central Fire Service. And these were kind of transferring funds, sort of technical fixes. Ted Leonard really was the one that made the most amendments that he had on the table, having to decrease the mill rates by actually, moving some money around. There is some money put aside in the budget based on what the governor has said about not matching the bond debt reimbursement, the 70-30 split that we've talked about a lot on the last bonds that were passed by the voters, having to do with the five schools that were constructed or modified this last, multiple projects really over the last few years. And the borough had set aside some money thinking that they may get stuck on that 70% that the borough had, or the state had agreed to pay. Sounds like Ted Leonard is asking to take that out and put that back in the budget, which in turn would lower the mill rate by a little amount. So he's betting it would look on that the end of the day that the state's going to follow through on their part of that agreement. I guess we'll see about that.
And actually pay, because that's one of the interesting discussions ongoing, of course, at the legislature with different points of view about how to handle it, and, of course, the governor's opinion, too.
Right. So there's a few other here by Mr. Mayfield having to do with education again. Again, just kind of moving money around within the budget. Another one significant that Mr. Leonard, Assemblyman Leonard, has on here, having to do with revenue sharing. The budget that the manager, presented didn't have revenue sharing in the budget. It looks like Mr. Leonard, who I guess we should probably say, whose wife is a legislator on the House side of the budget, is counting on revenue sharing being part of it. So he's added that amount back in their budget. Again, we don't know because the budget's not done yet. And then another significant amendment that Mr. Leonard has is a reduction by $1.5 million for the manager to just determine to take out of the budget, sort of an across-the-board reduction.
So he's added that, direction to the manager to remove $1.5 million.
Right. Yeah, and I always sort of object to those sort of amendments. I think that while it looks like it gives the manager more discretion in doing it, I also think it's kind of a pass from the assembly saying, you do the work to find out. I just think it's too much. So I have a little heartburn when assembly members do that, because I think they've got the budget in front of them. They can make suggestions. I'm not quite sure if that's a fair way to do it, but we'll see. The most significant one that I was looking at, Mike, of these that I sent you, was amendments proposed by Assemblyman Sumner, which basically eliminates the Capital Projects Department. The Capital Projects Department is something that was put in place by a former mayor and assembly to kind of shepherd all of the capital projects that were coming their way from school bond projects. And I will admit it, when they came up with that department, I was a little dubious about it. I wasn't quite sure that they needed to expand that. But I've become quite impressed with at least this particular public capital projects director in the efficiency that they're working and how they've developed a really good relationship with the DOT to make some really what I consider savings for the borough.
So
more,
if you eliminate it, though, wouldn't, I mean, they're doing a significant amount of work. How would that be handled then? Would the assembly take it over?
Well, they're looks like they're saying put it all under the tent of public works. And there are two completely different ways of operating. Capital projects is planning, project managing, working with other departments. Public works is to kind of put the grease in the gear and make sure that it works once it's up. So they're two completely different visions. So I'm a little, I can understand where Mr. Sumner comes from, because he's not a fan of, or it would seem, of government overall. But I think this may be a very short-sighted cut. I think there's a lot of damage from the earthquake that's been identified. We don't know whether we're going to be building a new school or not. I think that we have a, in my own personal opinion, a capital projects manager that is pretty talented and has shown to be very, to use a lot of efficiencies and has executed the projects pretty well. You could, of course, ask him to make some reductions in his own department, I suppose, but to completely wipe out that department, which took a while to wind up. These things are easy to wind down, not so easy to wind back up.
And of course, if you have everyone else in public works working to their capacity, then you might end up having a paper shift, but essentially in the process maybe move capital over there, but that's only a paper shift, etc.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to have that discussion happen on. By the way, for listeners who are not aware, all of that we have been talking about is available on the borough's webpage. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the last one, Mike, before we wrap up, I think I'm concerned about, too, is just some cuts that Mr. Sumner has also asked for, like wages for the assembly. We assembly people do not make very much at all. It's a very pittance of it, which is why a lot of people that are retired do it. And the assembly, it's fair to say, is not always reflective of the population, because it's not everybody that can put the amount of time in to do it. And to it's really a small amount of money in comparison to what Anchorage or any other place makes. So I am a little taken back by that. It's been tried before, but I think that's a little short-sighted. And also to the mayor's wages as well. And it should be mentioned here that the mayor gave his wages last year directly to a project in Willow. He didn't even take it personally. He put it towards the restoration of a Willow project in Willow. He didn't even take it. So that ended up benefiting the borough. So these will be interesting conversations. And we'll just see
how it all works out. Right. It's going to be fascinating. Well, thank you, Citizen Lobbyists, for taking time to call in and go all through all of that. And we'll be looking forward to next week.
Yep.
All right.
Good.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests did not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.